I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Governor Chris Christie has faced a chorus of criticism after giving up his bid for the White House and endorsing Donald Trump to be the Republican nominee. Seven New Jersey newspapers called for his resignation, and several Republican lawmakers told him he had to choose between Trenton and Trump. His poll numbers in New Jersey are in the 30s. Meg Whitman, national finance co-chair of the Christie campaign, called his endorsement of Trump an astonishing display of political opportunism. Former New Jersey Governor Christine Todd Whitman called Christie a desperate opportunist last week in Time magazine. She went on to say, "I'm ashamed that Christie has endorsed anyone who has employed the kind of hate-mongering and racism that Trump has." Well, we asked the governor to join us because she knows New Jersey is a Republican, and she, yes, had Christie's job. Christine Todd Whitman was the governor of New Jersey from 1994 to 2001. She went on to serve in the cabinet of President George W. Bush as administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency. That was from January 2001 to June of 2003. And Governor Whitman, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
It's good to be back with you.
So a shame for your party, for your state, for yourself, for Chris Christie himself?
No, I think Chris Christie made a decision that he believes to be the right one, and I have to respect that. I don't agree with it, but I can respect it. But for the state, for the party, I think this is a very dangerous thing. As I've said repeatedly, the kind of language that Donald Trump is employing is a kind of hate-mongering that can cause some very bad reactions and things, emotions that are going to get unleashed that you can't put back in the box. Very easily. And we're going to see some bad things happen, I'm afraid.
Well, I'm thinking about the last Republican debate and the other candidates went after Donald Trump and then at the very end asked whether they would vote for him if he's the nominee. And basically they said yes, which in certain ways is what Chris Christie did. How are we supposed to understand that?
I don't know how people understand that when they I guess it goes, obviously it does go to party loyalty. That's what it's all about, which is, I understand party loyalty, but there comes a time when you have to put the country ahead of the party. And I think the damage that Donald Trump can do, that the rhetoric is doing, is already a really, really problematic thing. And I worry that we're going to see more of this, and we're going to see people suddenly find that they're being attacked because they're hearing this from the very highest people running for the presidency of the United States. They're being attacked just because of their ethnic background. And that's not who we have been as a nation. We're a nation built on immigrants. That's just not who we are, period.
What does that, though, tell us about the millions of people who do support Donald Trump as a Republican nominee?
Well, look, I understand the people who are frustrated and angry. This has been a dysfunctional government for so long that I appreciate why people are saying, I just want someone who's going to tell me they're going to get something done, that they say they're going to do it and they mean it, and they feel that Donald Trump, that's what he is saying and that's what he means. So it's something that I appreciate that. They're not necessarily bad people. They're desperate people. But I just hope they will look behind the rhetoric to get a better understanding of the man himself. Because when you hear things like, well, I want a businessman, and you say, okay, but do you want a businessman that's taken his four companies bankrupt through bankruptcy in order to get his money out and cost people their jobs, who's had failed ventures, an airline, a liquor store, a magazine, not a liquor store, but a liquor line, a magazine, a whole host of things? That's not my definition of a really successful businessman. And do you want someone who is predicating their appeal on hate and demonizing and denigrating whole groups of people because of their ethnic background?
Do you see yourself as part of a group of very prominent Republicans, Mitt Romney being one, a number of the writers in the National Review magazine? They dedicated a whole magazine telling Trump supporters essentially that they're backing the wrong guy. Do you see yourself as part of that campaign against Trump?
Well, I'm certainly been against him for a long time now. I am for John Kasich. I believe we have in Kasich a candidate who has shown the ability to reach across the aisle, bring people together, balance a budget at the federal level, at the state level. He knows how to work with Congress. He was on the Armed Services Committee for 18 years. He chaired the Budget Committee the last time we had a balanced budget. And he's been a governor, so he's had executive experience. Those are the that's a combination of skills that I'd like to see, because at the end of the day, I want someone who can get things done. I want someone who can actually govern. And that does take, you can't bluster your way through this. You can't bully your way to a conclusion or getting a successful policy through. You have to be able to work with people. And we just haven't seen any sign of that in Donald Trump's long history. People say, well, he'll be different. You know, he's just saying this now. Why? What makes you think he's suddenly going to change?
John Kasich has said exactly what you said at the various debates the Republican candidates have had. And while he's done, you know, he's had a couple of victories, he doesn't seem to be able to make the kind of, you know, headway. And perhaps Ohio's coming up and some of these northern states, but he hasn't been able to make the kind of headway to make that message resonate with Republican voters.
Well, because he's getting absolutely no earned media. The media has kind of decided it's Donald Trump, or now they're kind of saying, well, maybe it's Donald Trump and Ted Cruz. For a while it was, no, it's Donald Trump and Marco Rubio. I mean, the media, to a large extent, is trying to pick the winner, and they're doing it by how much airtime they give people. If John Kasich had gotten the kind of, even a fraction of the airtime that Donald Trump got, I will willing to lay any kind of bet with you that he would be much further ahead in the polls. As it is, Donald Trump does not have the delegates yet to be able to win the convention. Ted Cruz certainly seems to be coming up, but if you combine the votes of the delegate votes that Ted Cruz, John Kasich, and Marco Rubio have, it's more combined than Donald Trump. So this is not over, and yet there's so many people that seem to want it to be over at all sorts of levels and saying, no, this is going to be it. These are the two. John Kasich is coming up in some of the Midwestern states now. Hopefully he will win his home state. And when that happens, he can go to the convention, and there can be a brokered convention that might lead us to a ticket. Presidential and vice president could actually win the election.
And then govern.
More importantly, they could win and govern.
Assuming there is a brokered convention, and let's say that Donald Trump ends up being the nominee, would you vote for him as a Republican if the other person on the Democratic side was either Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders?
No, I'm not going to vote for Donald Trump. I can write in. That's always an option.
Would you write in, John?
It depends on who the Democrats have nominated, but I just couldn't. I can't feel as strongly as I do about the kind of hurt that Donald Trump can do to this country and to our principles and to our military overseas by threatening, saying we're going to go bomb the families of ISIS fighters. You know, you don't think that's not going to drive more people into the camp of the terrorists? It's just, I couldn't vote for him in good conscience.
Let me quote something you wrote in Politico magazine. This goes back to December 16th of 2015, last year. You say, Trump is employing the kind of hateful rhetoric and exploiting the insecurities of this nation in much the same way that allowed Hitler and Mussolini to rise to power in the lead up to World War II. Are you saying that he is an iteration of either Hitler or Mussolini?
Well, he's employing the tactics and appealing to the same. He's basing his appeal on the same approach of taking people who are angry and frustrated. They're scared. They don't know whether they'll have a job. They have to work twice as hard to stay where they are. They think our borders are totally porous. They don't believe that this president has shown any kind of leadership at all. And they just want someone who says they're going to get it done. And right now they're lashing out, and Donald Trump is the one who says, I'm going to get it done. Now, if you try to say, okay, how? He's going to get Mexico to pay for the fence. Not exactly sure how he's going to accomplish that one. You know, when you start to probe and get behind his rhetoric, there's not much there. Now, he's not Hitler, obviously. He's not Mussolini. He doesn't have a plan to go after one whole segment of society in as concerted a way as Hitler did. But, you know, by saying that the Mexicans coming across the border are murderers and rapists, he kind of sets up that dynamic.
It seems, looking back at Donald Trump's history, I should say, with either the Republican or Democratic parties or with Republicans and Democrats, it seems he could have gone either way. He could have run as a Democrat as easily as he is running as a Republican. Why, though, do you think, as a kind of political calculation, he chose the Republican Party?
I believe he looked at what the field and decided that Hillary really was going to be the Democrat nominee. She was going to be too tough for him to fight, particularly both coming out of New York. She has the party loyalty. She has the organization there, whereas the Republicans were still very split. We've been in a period of reconfiguring for quite some time now. You've seen it with Paul Ryan, he was the brokered candidate to be Speaker of the House. He got some of the more conservative members to vote for him, and now they're saying, you know, watch out, we're going to come after you.
Right.
It's been a very, shall we say, dynamic time in the Republican Party, so that it looked like a better bet where he could bring in the disenfranchised, bring in the more conservative members, and be able to move to the forefront.
Is divisive another word for dynamic?
I think he's been very divisive.
I mean, are we seeing, and some have said this, that we are potentially witnessing, if not the dissolution of the Republican Party, a true identity crisis for the party?
That's certainly going through an identity crisis. It's going to have to determine which way it's going to go in the long run, what it wants to be. We have been moving further and further to the right, and that's worked at the local level in the congressional districts, because you can carve those out such that you stack them with a tendency toward Republican or Democrat, and then it's just Democrats have to worry about attacks from the left, Republicans from the right. But from a presidential point of view, we're having challenges. And if you look at the polls, most of the American people are right smack in the center. And I don't believe as we go further into this campaign and we hear more of this kind of rhetoric that we've been hearing, that the American people will say, this is what we want in our leader who represents us to the world and the person who can actually get things done by bringing people together, because you can't fire Congress, you can't fire the Supreme Court, and you can't fire the federal workforce entirely.
About a minute before we have to say goodbye to you, Governor Whitman, you were governor for 8 years. Some have raised questions about whether the current governor, Chris Christie, has spent enough time literally in the state to do his job. Some have even called for him to resign. Where do you stand on that, or do you?
I don't. I mean, he's back in the state now, it appears, and he is concentrating on the state. And Lord knows there are a lot of problems that New Jersey has, and they need his concentration. He certainly showed in his first term that when he was there and focused, he could get things done. He could reach across the aisle. He could make things happen. I don't know whether it's so broken now that it's – I know it's a much bigger challenge than before, but, at least if he's there and concentrating on it, that's the job he was hired to do, and that's good. That's where we want him.
Well, Governor Whitman, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times. Nice to talk to you again after a number of years.
I know. It's been a while.
It has. No, thanks so much.
Take care.
You too. And that's Christine Todd Whitman, governor of New Jersey from 94 to 2001. She served as administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency in the cabinet of President George W. Bush. We've got two guests waiting in the wings, carrying on our conversation, focusing on Chris Christie, on New Jersey and presidential politics. 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoe. And just a recap here, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie took a lot of heat at home when he endorsed Donald Trump's nomination for the presidency. A bunch of New Jersey newspapers called for his resignation. Several Republican lawmakers also said he needed to choose between Trenton and Trump, and he did endorse Donald Trump. The governor has vowed to address New Jersey's most pressing issues to complete his term. I just said goodbye to former Governor Christine Todd Whitman, who's been highly critical of a Trump candidacy and Christie's endorsement. Joining us now are Matt Katz, who has covered Chris Christie for 5 years. He works now for WNYC. And for New Jersey Public Radio, wrote a book called American Governor, Chris Christie's Bridge to Redemption, was a guest on Radio Times earlier this year talking about his book. And Matt, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks a lot, Marty.
You're very welcome. And joining us by telephone, another Matt Friedman, reporter for Politico New Jersey, or Politico NJ, I should say, where he writes the New Jersey Playbook, previously covered Garden State politics for the Star-Ledger's Trenton Bureau and for Politiker NJ. Matt Friedman, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
Hi, Marty.
Matt Katz, let me begin with you and begin with Christie's popularity in New Jersey. He has struggled with maintaining his popularity in the state, and it seems in the last couple of years it's taken a big hit, not just running for president, but also when he was head of the Republican Governors Association. Where do the people stand on their governor?
Yeah, we're down to historic lows for the governor, high 20%. Low 30 percentile. This is a governor who, after Superstorm Sandy in 2012, he was in the 70s. A Republican in a blue state, he won re-election the following year by 20-some-odd points. And now, you know, he is deeply unpopular, not only among Democrats and independents, but also among many Republicans. The fact that he's been out of state so much, he's spent most of the days of his second term out of state, has really been noticed by the people of New Jersey. And there's a sense that he's just not governing like he did in the first term. I mean, there's appointments haven't been made. There are several cabinet members serving in an acting capacity. There's nobody sitting on there's a missing seat on the Supreme Court. There's been an acting attorney general since 2013, I believe. And the big initiatives that were a key part of his popularity and the reason why he gained a national conservative following just don't exist anymore. There's no negotiations with unions over the pension crisis. There's an issue with the Transportation Trust Fund that pays for road and bridge repairs, and there appears to be gridlock on that. So that's really been noticed by the average voter of New Jersey.
Matt Friedman, I'm looking at some stats, I guess, here, which is last year, 2015, the governor was out of the state for 72% of those days. I think I have that correct. Is it that he ran for president that has gotten people in New Jersey so angry about their governor?
Aside from just the big issues that the state has continued to face during his governorship, and we had, you know, constant downgrades. You know, he was supposed to fix the pension system, but went back on his own law. And so we remain in that morass. But certainly you can see the correlation between the amount of time he spent out of state, not just running, but in the couple years leading up to his run for president, and the drop in the polls. Absolutely. The more time he spent out of state, the less popular he was. And now he's just deeply, deeply unpopular. And I don't know if he can get it back by staying in state more. And I felt his press conference, he held a two-hour press conference last week, really coming just as New Jersey. It had gotten so bad, his approval rating so bad, and his Trump endorsement so over the top that even New Jersey Republicans were starting to distance themselves from him. And I saw him call a two-hour press conference to kind of say, you know, I'm in control here. I'm back. I'm not going to be spending as much time out of state. I don't know if it's possible to get the mojo back at this point, though.
Well, and I wonder, too, we should talk about the Trump endorsement, Matt. We were actually talking about this before going on the air. And that image, I think when I say that, people will know of Donald Trump standing, talking about his wins on Super Tuesday. And behind him was Chris Christie looking. Hard to say what was going on inside his head, but you told me that meme just exploded across the country.
Yeah, this was on Super Tuesday. Christie endorsed Trump on a Friday. This was a surprise to even his own members of his own inner circle. Nobody knew he was doing this. He told his press office told the press that he was in New Jersey. Apparently, he was on a secret plane trip to Texas. Endorses Trump, and then on Super Tuesday, he shows up in Florida to introduce Trump at this press conference. And then the way the camera shot was set up, all you saw was Trump at the podium. And then after Christie introduced him, he stepped to to Trump's right and behind him. And it was such a striking, unusual image because the press conference kept going on and Chris Christie never sat down. And he had this face on him like he, you know, the internet said he was either being held hostage or he was like, oh my God, what have I done? I just endorsed Donald Trump, this guy. And we were at home, millions of Americans at home were projecting what Chris Christie must have been thinking to be standing behind the guy who was most responsible for him having lost his own presidential campaign. In reality, this is just kind of the way Christie looks when he's standing behind somebody at a podium. It's sort of his resting face. He kind of looks dour. His eyes are dark. darting around the room. His hands hang at his side somewhat awkwardly. And, those of us in the press corps were used to that. But I think for America, it was the first time they'd seen it. And then on Super Tuesday, Chris Christie's name was the number one trending topic on Twitter. And nobody else who was even running, who was actually running, including Donald Trump, was even in the top 10. So Chris Christie somehow found himself in the center of the media cycle.
And Matt, maybe this is just politics. Matt Friedman, maybe this is just politics, which is that you run against someone, you say they're unfit for office, and then you endorse them. And I don't know whether that's unusual in election politics, but because there's so much attention focused on this race and the tenor of that race, it does raise some questions about someone's belief in their own belief system.
You know, his criticism of Donald Trump during the campaign, there was plenty of it, but frankly, it was quite mild compared to what Jeb Bush and John Kasich and Marco Rubio were saying about Donald Trump. I mean, Donald Trump said thousands of Christie's own, fellow New Jerseyans were out cheering in the streets on 9/11. And Christie, at first at least, really took a pass on criticizing him for saying something as blatantly false and frankly defamatory to so many New Jerseyans. And only a little while later, after suffering some backlash for not doing that, put in a fairly mild rebuke against Donald Trump. He is certainly facing some problems at home. I think not mainly because of the fact that he criticized Trump on the campaign trail, but because his endorsement of Trump went against pretty much everything he stood for in the lead up to him running for president, before he took a hard right turn to run for president, whether it was his comments on Muslim leaders in the community, his outreach to Muslim leaders, his appeal to Hispanic voters. How do you justify those things and then turn around and endorse a guy who said such inflammatory things about them? That's where I think he faces the real issues here. It is typical for a Republican candidate in a primary to say bad things about his opponent, and then the general election comes around and he has to support him. But in this case, I think it's Christie versus Chris Christie from before the presidential campaign.
That's interesting to you, Matt Katz. I mean, New Jersey is a very diverse state, as I understand. I mean, a very urbanized state as well. And it's kind of a blue state, is it not?
Yeah. And Christie had made pretty remarkable inroads into communities of color for a Republican. He won 51% of the Hispanic vote in his reelection. He called conservatives who were saying that his Muslim judicial appointee was going to practice Sharia law, he called those conservatives crazies. He had really he was endorsed by the most prominent African-American religious leader in the state for his reelection. And people close to him, people who are still allies of his, people who like him and support him, told me on background that they were like very disappointed, that they thought that all of these very legitimate efforts the governor had made through the years to reach out to these communities were just wiped away with one endorsement of somebody that many Republicans in New Jersey view to be a bigot. And this was difficult for people close to him to grapple with.
But do you think it's going to hurt Chris Christie as he returns to governing his state because of his various endorsements and things that he said on the presidential campaign trail?
We've already seen Republican legislators who have been absolutely obedient to the governor through the first term and into the second term, have already started to complain on the record publicly. Wow. And say that maybe if the governor is going to be traveling around for Donald Trump, maybe he needs to resign. People who's Republicans saying on the record that they're not going to support Trump and they're disappointed in Christie. And if Christie doesn't have Republicans' legislative support, then it's going to be very difficult for him to accomplish anything in the state, particularly because his governing partners on the Democratic side, many of them are now positioning to run for governor. And the last thing that they want to do is to associate too closely with a Republican governor who's in Donald Trump's camp if they want to win in this blue state.
Well, we are talking about this. Hold on, Matt. I just need to quickly reintroduce you just so people know who's talking. And the voice you just heard, Matt Katz, and he has been covering Chris Christie for a number of years now, first for the Philadelphia Inquirer. He now reports for WNYC in New York, New Jersey Public Radio, where he runs the the Christie Tracker, wrote a book that came out earlier this year, was a guest on Radio Times talking about it, American Governor, Chris Christie's Bridge to Redemption. Matt Friedman joining us by telephone. He's a reporter for Politico NJ. Am I just saying that right?
No, New Jersey is fine.
Okay, Politico New Jersey, where he writes the New Jersey playbook, and he's been covering the Garden State for the Star Ledger's Trenton Bureau, also for Politiker NJ. And we're not really spending a lot of time talking about Donald Trump's run for the office. It's really about Christie's endorsement and the fact that he's been out of the state so much. He's now back, although there are questions about what he and other members of the legislature can do. 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us, at WHYY Radio Times. Matt Friedman, you wanted to add something.
Yeah, I just wanted to, I think the Republicans actually going on the record saying Christie should resign if he's going to, go be out of state campaigning for Trump really was remarkable, because you have to realize that these people, these Republicans in the legislature, have sponsored bills that Christie has vetoed, and then they've been forced to actually vote against their own bills so as not to override them, because the governor wouldn't want that to happen. They saw their party lose 4 assembly seats this year as the governor went out and ran for president and didn't really help much with the campaign effort. He was so unpopular in New Jersey, granted. I don't know what he could have done publicly for them. They saw their funds depleted. They saw them spend $250,000 on private jet flights from the Republican State Committee when Republican candidates were vastly outfunded by Democrats in this state. And yet they said very little publicly that was critical of him. Hmm. It took Donald Trump to really get it out there and start this sort of groundswell of Republicans who are actually willing to criticize Christie. I thought that was remarkable.
And also, I don't know, was this remarkable, Matt Katz, that a number of newspapers basically told him to resign? I mean, this, either be governor or in a sense endorse Trump and work for his candidacy, but you can't do both.
Right. I mean, if you've been reading the editorial pages of the New Jersey newspapers of late, it didn't come as that much of a shock. But because all of the Gannett newspapers in New Jersey, 6 of them, did a joint editorial followed by the Star Ledger, the biggest newspaper in New Jersey, with a similar editorial calling for either him to be recalled or to resign, that did get a bunch of national attention. And it might have been part of what prompted him to do this 2-hour press conference last week that Matt was talking about, to say that he's back and in charge. And he used that opportunity to disparage local journalism in the state and say that nobody reads the editorial page anymore. This is a guy who did work very hard to get the endorsements of editorial pages in New Hampshire. And it should be noted that he got the endorsement of the paper in Manchester, New Hampshire, when he was running for president. And that paper has since rescinded that endorsement because he's backing Trump. And this is the same thing that happened to Chris Christie in New Jersey when the Star Ledger endorsed him for reelection and then rescinded that endorsement. So he has a very tumultuous relationship with these editorial pages.
Well, Matt, let me go back to you, only because you wrote a book about Chris Christie. You have followed him for years. You've spent time interviewing him. Why do you think he endorsed Donald Trump? Obviously, he made the calculation that this guy is going to be the Republican nominee for the White House.
Yeah, I mean, 2 main reasons. First, it's the right political move. On the face of it, it makes sense to endorse the guy who you think is going to win the nomination, particularly before most other establishment Republicans have endorsed him. So just as he was among the first people to endorse Mitt Romney, the first major Republicans to endorse Mitt Romney in 2011, 2012, he's now doing the same with Donald Trump. And that is the right political move, because if somehow Donald Trump becomes president, then he is in line for a major position. I mean, attorney general, perhaps, White House chief of staff. This is all total speculation.
Sure.
He won't talk about it. But that's the way it works. And that's transactional politics, which the governor knows well. The second piece of it is personal. They're actually friends.
About 14 years, right?
About 14 years, yes. Christie was federal prosecutor in the state, and he went around meeting the judges, the federal judges. And among those he met was Trump's sister, who is a federal court judge in New Jersey, and Trump's sister said, my brother Donald wants to meet you. So Christie went over to Trump Tower, had a meal, broke bread with the Donald, and the Donald actually ordered for Christie. He said, give me some of that, you know, the good stuff you gave me last week. And
make it two, right?
Yeah, exactly right. And then they would have periodic meals. And Christie used to joke that Trump talked the whole time. He consumed the conversation at the meal. Mary Pat, his wife, would say that she couldn't get a word in edgewise and she was exhausted at the end of these meals. But, you know, they enjoyed each other's company. Christie likes to be around celebrities, famous people, wealthy people. And Christie actually went to Trump's third wedding where he actually met the Clintons. So it makes sense from a personal level that he would endorse the guy who's local, has some golf courses in New Jersey, and is his closest friend of the remaining candidates in the field. So personally, politically, it makes sense. All the other reasons, though, maybe not.
Well, Matt, we're almost up on a break. You want to add anything to that? How do you see that endorsement? Do we have Matt?
Oh, I'm sorry. Is this Matt Friedman?
I'm sorry. I should have said Matt Friedman. I'm sorry, Matt Friedman. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think people I've talked to mainly view it as a very cynical endorsement, to be honest with you. That's, you know, not really concerned with the future of the Republican Party, but with the shot he has at getting some political power. I think that clearly he made a calculation that his future immediately after he dropped out of the race for president, let me say that when I talked to people, a lot of people felt he did still have a potential future. If he came back to New Jersey, worked some miracles in this state, and it is going to be some miracles to deal with some of the big problems we have, then he might be in a good position to set himself up for another run for president in 2020, or he could be in a good position to be in if a Republican wins in his cabinet. His endorsement of Donald Trump, really among the at least Republican elite and the sort of more mainstream, more quote-unquote establishment, public establishment people, has made him a pariah in those circles. And so now he's really, really got to bank on Donald Trump winning not just the nomination, but the presidency.
Matt, I'm going to jump in here.
Like he's burned the other bridges.
We'll pick up on all of that after this very short break. And do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen. We are talking about New Jersey, New Jersey's Governor Chris Christie, who, as we all know, ran for president, didn't get very far. He did endorse Donald Trump. He's now back in the state, although he's got a vacation, I believe, in the next day or so. He has said, I'm back at work. I'm going to do my job. And there have been a number of critics, in fact, a number of newspapers that said he should resign. Some Republicans have raised a whole host of criticisms about him as well. Matt Friedman, reporter for Politico New Jersey, where he writes the New Jersey Playbook. Matt Katz writes about New Jersey for reports about Chris Christie and New Jersey for WNYC and for New Jersey Public Radio. And again, wrote this book called American Governor Chris Christie's Bridge to Redemption. 1-888-477-9499. And you can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Matt Katz, a tweet from AJ. I love how Christie's plans to go on vacation with the threat of a New Jersey transit strike wasn't on vacation while endorsing Trump. I mean, he is, I think it's his 30th anniversary.
Today is his 30th anniversary with Mary Pat.
And they have vacation plans.
They have vacation plans, and he hasn't taken a vacation in quite some time because he was running for president. And he says that he can monitor this pending New Jersey transit strike while in warmer climes, but he's not telling us actually where he is. Mm-hmm. But this strike is a big potential disaster.
Well, this is New Jersey Transit, right?
That's right. That's right. I mean, this would be the trains going into New York City for the commute beginning as early as Monday. They've been out without the transit workers there have been without a contract for 5 years. And they could strike as early as Sunday. Negotiations are continuing, but there doesn't appear to be any movements. There's a contingency plan, but it will only take care of 30 to 40% of commuters using buses and ferries. New Jersey Transit is hoping that people work from home if this were to happen, but it obviously can bring the economy, bring people's lives to a grinding halt for untold number of days and weeks. And there was some pushback. The governor saw some unfortunate headlines headlines today as New Jersey Transit approaches strike, the governor goes on vacation, which is, you know, not exactly the best headline if he wants to improve his approval ratings from the high 20s. So that is a big issue. The biggest issue currently facing the state of New Jersey, if that were to happen.
Sure.
And then there's a lot of other problems, obviously, as well, that he needs to deal with. And that's, I guess, the second most pressing would be Atlantic City. The city government is set to run out of money as early as April, and there appear to be only two options. One is bankruptcy, which could potentially derail the bond market for the whole for municipalities throughout the state. That would be a last-ditch emergency measure. The other option would be a state takeover, and that is opposed by local government, obviously, in Atlantic City, which would lose all their powers to this obscure board in state government, would end up controlling Atlantic City and reopen labor contracts and fire employees. And that also is – there's a lot of struggle with that bill because the assembly is slow to moving it. The New Jersey Senate president wants it. The governor wants it. But it's stopped in the assembly, and there clearly need to be negotiations in order to figure out a solution. But Atlantic City, this major driver of taxes and revenue, and also this kind of symbol in New Jersey, is approaching the fiscal cliff. It's a dire situation.
And Matt Friedman, as Matt Katz was describing this potential of a New Jersey transit strike, you think of the optics. And I don't know whether it's the same thing as when a storm comes in, and if a governor is not there to, you know, help people, or at least, you know, be in the state to deal with it. Does this have a potential problem for the governor if, for instance, there is some kind of a transit actual strike on Monday?
It does. And we've seen it before. I mean, very early, you know, in the first year of his term, or maybe just 1 year in, he went to Disney World with his family. He said, "I'm going to take a vacation with my family. We haven't had a chance to be together a lot." And he wouldn't let, you know, a blizzard that hit the state stop him. So he was in Florida while we got hit by a paralyzing blizzard. You could argue whether or not the governor's presence would have made a difference, but it looked horrible and it generated negative headlines for weeks after that. I thought he learned a lesson from it. You know, it seemed he did. But in this case, you know, the governor says, "Well, I've got a cell phone. I don't need to be there personally involved in the negotiations." But you could also argue that during his time out of state, you know, a lot of governance really did seem like a lot of governance in the state did grind to a halt. There wasn't a lot going on while he was out of there. And the people he needs to be negotiating with on these other issues, the Senate president, for instance, has said that you can't, you know, it's not the same when he has a cell phone as it is being, you need to be in the room face-to-face to negotiate. So, yes, I think it has the potential to be politically damaging. If there's any silver lining for him in this, I guess it's that it seems that lately his polls seem to have almost, I've never seen them go below 30%, aside from half a poll right in the immediate aftermath of him endorsing Donald Trump, but it's not a big enough sample size to really bank on. So if there's any silver lining, it's that his polls might be at the bottom. I don't know if they could go any lower.
We have an email from Daniel. Says, "What political future do your guests see for Christie? Menendez is vulnerable. Can Christie still win an election in New Jersey?" Now, what Matt Katz, he's got a couple of years left on his governorship.
Yeah, he's out January 2018 would be his last day in office. He has said that he would rather commit suicide than be in the U.S. Senate. Now, clearly, I guess he could flip-flop on that position, but I really don't see him running for Senate. I don't think he would likely win. I also don't think there's been speculation that if Menendez were to resign because he is under indictment, that Christie could appoint himself to that seat. I think that's unlikely. I think Christie's political future rests in there being a Democratic president who wins in November, and then he potentially tries again in 2020 for president. I can't imagine that he pursues any other office other than that going forward.
What do you think, Matt Friedman?
I agree with the Senate seat thing. If he did do that, not just from saying he would commit suicide, and in some cases, I think he said jump off the Brooklyn Bridge. He'd rather jump off the Brooklyn Bridge and serve in the Senate. But just during his campaign for president, his whole appeal was supposed to be, "I'm the executive. These guys are senators. They know nothing. They do nothing." So to go into that role, even if he appointed himself and served for a year before a special election, Between all those things he said and his deep unpopularity right now in New Jersey, I don't see how he would ever win a full term, aside from the fact that New Jersey hasn't elected a Republican senator since 1972. I think the Donald Trump endorsement really burned his bridge to redemption. Sorry, Matt.
Oh, yeah, man, Matt.
I was going to ask Matt Katz about that, but go ahead, Matt Friedman.
I think it might have burned his bridge to redemption with the really more quote-unquote establishment Republicans. He was the first to jump, and a lot of them might have to jump with Trump. But I think a lot of people saw that as a sort of betrayal, to be totally honest with you.
Because, I mean, in fact, Mitt Romney had approached him at one point about being a VP. I mean, at a certain period of time, Chris Christie was seen as, you know, somebody that the Republican establishment, Matt Katz, could get behind.
Sure. I mean, he was the chairman of the Republican Governors Association. He was an absolute pillar of the Republican establishment. He believes that by virtue of his personality and time, that he will be able to rebuild this bridge, so to speak, to take the analogy to a ridiculous end. And I think that is potentially possible. I also think he thinks that in 2020, that this Trump movement, that these Trumpian Republicans could give him some support, that they could see him as a similar to Trump, and that somebody who they owe a favor to because that he was able to step forward and back their guy in 2016. So maybe he can bring some of that constituency over to him in 2020 if it comes to that. I think he thinks that's also a possibility.
Well, since you're all talking about a bridge to redemption, Chris Christie's bridge to redemption, of course, the subtitle of Matt Katz's book, where does that is it investigation? Is that the right – where does that stand?
The Bridgegate investigation.
Yeah. Yes.
Bridgegate, right now there's a trial that is currently scheduled for May. I'm told we shouldn't expect it to begin until the fall. So it's going to be delayed some more time. That'll be at that point almost a year and a half since the indictments. There's also, we understand, an investigation ongoing into David Sampson, who is the former chairman of the Port Authority for various things, but most notably for creating a flight route out of Newark Airport to his vacation home in South Carolina that they called the Chairman's Flight. Now, David Sampson is perhaps Christie's closest friend outside of his family and people he grew up with. So this is a and he's also a former attorney general in the state of New Jersey. I mean, this is a major player. So if there were to be another indictment, and we don't know if there will be, but if there were to be, that would also be a complication for Christie. And then, you know, who knows what happens at the Bridgegate trial? There's unindicted co-conspirators. There's a secret list out there that several media organizations, including ours, have filed papers with the court to try to see that list, and there are two former close appointees of the governor who are going to be testifying, and we don't know what they're going to be saying on the stand. So there's a lot left to the Bridgegate story.
And Matt Friedman,
I want to put one on the pile. There's
go
also
ahead.
The Securities and Exchange Commission investigation into the use of money to repair the Pulaski Skyway that had been originally used dedicated to the ARC tunnel. And whether that was legal. So I don't know. I think it's probably a long shot that there will be criminal indictments out of that. But that's certainly an unresolved investigation that could potentially be damaging as well.
Let me read a couple of comments here. An email from David. He says, any chance that Trump is paying off Christie's campaign debts in return for Christie's endorsement? I'm looking at you, Matt Katz.
I hadn't thought about that. I think the governor should be able to cover. He was running something of a bare bones campaign.
Really?
I think he should be able to cover his expenses. I haven't looked at the latest filings yet. We haven't seen them yet. New Jersey taxpayers, of course, were handling some of the cost of his campaign, so he had that advantage. They were paying for his cars while he was up in New Hampshire, and his security, and untold other costs that we haven't been able to see yet. So I don't think that's a possibility, but who knows? Matt's been writing about a super PAC that was supporting the governor and a secret $250,000 that came from an undisclosed entity. So we're waiting to see if we ever find out who those people are. But it would be unlikely that Donald Trump would open his own wallet to help Christie out.
Matt Freeman, you want to add to that and tell us more about the super PAC?
Oh, well, you know, if Donald Trump is going to do that, I guess we'll see in the next filing or whatever filing he does. But there's been no indication. The super PAC is just one thing, and this is part of a bigger trend. There was a $250,000 donation to America Leads, which is a super PAC run by the governor's closest allies that raised, you know, more money than his presidential campaign did. It spent on ads to boost them, especially in places like New Hampshire. A company, I'm blanking on the name right now, is like something like Home Decor LLC. It formed, you know, one day, and 16 days later, gave a $250,000 donation to this super PAC. We don't know who actually founded this company. It was founded through a Delaware third-party company that basically protects the identity. And the reason this complaint is filed is because this seems to be a growing tech trend right now in campaign finance. Super PACs can raise and spend unlimited amounts of money. The only thing they have to do is actually disclose their donors. So now you have this trend of donors hiding their identities behind LLCs. And there's a lot of organizations in Washington, campaign finance watchdog organizations, that are going after these donors. Christie's by not the only person who's done it. There's a, and I'm sorry, it's not technically not even Christie, it's a super PAC. There's a super PAC supporting Steve Bullock, the mayor of Jersey City, wants to run for governor, that accepted $1 million donation from a company that was formed the day before it gave the donation. There's also complaints by the same watchdog groups about that donation.
Well,
so that's what's going on with that.
And just a couple minutes before I have to say goodbye to you, Matt Katz, the New Jersey primary is on June 7th. And, you know, that's about a month or so before the actual convention for the Republicans. And then a week later, the convention for the Democrats here in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it could matter if Trump fails to get the necessary delegates by then. And we could be moving towards some sort of contested convention where Trump's doesn't have the nomination sealed. Then the primary in June in New Jersey could be a big deal. And tonight in Princeton, I believe, the chairs of the county Republican committees are having a meeting to discuss who they might back. And that's significant because, A, they haven't fallen in line to support Chris Christie's candidate, Donald Trump. And that's an indication of where the state Republican Party is vis-a-vis their ostensible leader, Chris Christie. It's also interesting because – will they end up, you know, going for Rubio or some other more mainstream choice that could make New Jersey a real player in the presidential selection process, which it hasn't been in quite some time?
Sure, with a date like that. Final thoughts from you, Matt Freeman.
Yeah, just on June 7th, we're one of the last states. I think those are the last states. D.C. does it slightly after us, so what that's worth. But we're the second biggest state that day. The last day of the primaries behind California, which granted is a much bigger state. But we actually very well could matter. If Trump can't get the majority of delegates, we could be a key part of whether Trump gets that majority or doesn't, and it goes on to a brokered convention. But we'll know a lot more with the outcome of the races on the 15th when we have Florida and I believe Ohio. So we'll have a better indication of whether Marco Rubio and John Kasich are staying in this race. It's hard to see them staying if they don't win their home state. And that could change the game before our primary.
Well, my thanks to both of you. Matt Freeman, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you.
Reporter for Politico New Jersey, where he writes the New Jersey Playbook. Matt Katz, thank you for joining us as well.
Thanks, Marty.
Covers New Jersey and its governor for WNYC and for New Jersey Public Radio. Wrote a book called American Governor, Chris Christie's Bridge to Redemption. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes and you can find out much more about the program. You can download a podcast of the show, find us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. I'm Marty Moscowen. Thanks for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times, and do stay with us. We'll be right back.